VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. We have a news roundup day today, and thank you, Sandy, for all the stories you've gotten ready, prepared for us today. We've got Karen on the phones, Dennis in the control room right now, and the team behind us as well. We're so grateful for VCY America staff and thankful for your listening to us today and all the affiliate stations picking up Crosstalk to keep you informed on critical issues. Well, friends, early this week, we had the interview with Matt Staver of Liberty Council talking about the imminent vote coming forth on the so-called Respect for Marriage Act, H.R. 8404. Well, all of a sudden yesterday, the Senate, the word came out that the Senate is postponing the vote on this that would codify the federal law and the redefinition of marriage. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, the bill's chief sponsor and open lesbian, made the announcement after a lunch meeting with other senators. She told reporters, quote, "I'm still very confident that the bill will pass, but we will be taking the bill up later after the election." Now, friends, one of the things that's important to note on that is that, the phone calls that have been going in have certainly impacted the stalling of this taking place, that the calls are being effective. And right now they're trying to carve out some kind of religious liberty exemption. But friends, it is certainly a poison pill for the nation, in my opinion, to go the direction of this so-called Respect for Marriage Act. And this is something that they have been trying to get the amendment to get 10 Republican senators to jump on board with them, as they already have had a few. 47 Republicans did abandon the Republican platform in the House and joined with this. But there are senators that are toying with this, some on the fence. But keep in mind that this likely would come up then during a lame duck session of the Senate, when there's not an accountability of anybody facing an election at that time. From LifeSiteNews.com, Utah Republican Senator Mitt Romney suggested that he might vote for an amended version of the Democrats' pro-LGBT Respect for Marriage Act if it contained religious liberty carve-outs. Isn't he the one that brought this all about to begin with in the state of Massachusetts? "With the right for religious freedom amendments, I can support it," said Romney. "Without it, I'd be in a very different or difficult position to make," he added in that. So the Respect for Marriage Act, H.R. 8404, has been called off. We were getting many rumblings, even as of yesterday morning, that a vote would be taking place this coming Monday. And then later in the afternoon, Tammy Baldwin coming forth and saying it's been postponed until likely after the election. You can continue to reach out to your U.S. senators on this very issue. From CNSNews.com, more than 400 prominent Republicans have signed on to a letter in support of so-called homosexual marriage or same-sex marriage, the passage of the Respect for Marriage Act. News of the letter surfaced Monday, and the list of names was released Wednesday by Centerline Action. They talk about Susan Collins and Rob Portman, co-sponsors, Tom Tillis, Lisa Murkowski. But they also have stated, "As Republicans, libertarians, and politically independent conservatives, we believe strong families and lasting relationships strengthen communities, and civil marriage is a fundamental freedom central to individual liberty in the pursuit of happiness. We stand with the 71% of Americans today, including a majority of registered Republicans, who support the freedom to marry for all Americans." Well, some of the prominent names on here, you got some former U.S. senators like Bob Packwood and John Danforth. There's Barbara Bush, the daughter of former President George Bush. Christopher Cox, a former representative for California. He's chairman of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. There's Mary Cheney, the daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney. Barbara Comstock, the former U.S. rep from Virginia. Mary Madeline, former assistant to President Bush. Bruce Melman, the former Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Technology Policy under President Bush. Margaret Tutwiler, spokesperson for the U.S. State Department under President Bush. Olympia Snowe, former U.S. Senator from Maine, and Mehmet Oz, current GOP nominee for the U.S. Senate for Pennsylvania. And on the list goes. Very interesting indeed. Yesterday, we had a program, The War on the Unborn, and we took a number of calls, and I just wanted to share a comment that came to us here at Crosstalk. It's from an individual who was listening and said, I tried calling yesterday to share my story of the horrible care and treatment I received by our local abortion clinic in 1981, but it was too painful for me to speak about without falling apart. They were negligent, rude, and are flat-out liars when it comes to protecting themselves. Abortion is not safe, and these people will do anything to cover for themselves. But the mental, emotional, and spiritual trauma, when coming to the full realization that I murdered my own baby, still haunts me. Worse than having a dead baby at home, going back to the clinic twice, hemorrhaging, being lied to, and having to have a repeat procedure done, all while being told to be quiet and behave and not to upset the other patients that were there, and being ushered in and out a back door in secrecy. It is the most violent place in the world. By the grace of God, I've been forgiven and born again of the Spirit. Still, a piece of me will always be missing. Not only did I commit murder, but I look away. I look away the God-given purpose that was predestined for my child. Please let people know the absolute atrocities that happen inside these killing mills. Sent by one of the Crosstalk listeners from yesterday. From Todd Starnes, former President Trump posted the following on Truth Social. This is a bombshell. The FBI was paying people to steal the 2020 presidential election from me. There has never been anything like this in the history of our country. And then we're supposed to trust them with documents that they illegally took from my home, Mar-a-Lago? They are not trustworthy. Remember, the leadership of the FBI also tried to steal the 2016 election from me for a crooked Hillary. But the agents of the FBI revolted against Comey and his corrupt gang of thugs at the top. The alleged principal source of the discredited Steele dossier later became a paid FBI informant, according to a filing by Special Counsel John Durham. Igor Danchenko has been charged with 5 counts of lying to the FBI as part of Durham's probe into the origins of the original investigation into the 2016 Trump campaign's alleged collusion with Russian agents during the presidential race. A filing unsealed Tuesday said the FBI paid Danchenko as a confidential human source. Legal analyst Jonathan Turley wrote Wednesday, so the FBI cut off Steele as a paid source after he allegedly worked with the media to spread these unproven Russian collusion claims. It then turned around and hired his principal source for the dossier. Breitbart reported Wednesday that one online writer known as TechnoFog speculated that Danchenko might have been retained as a paid CHS to keep him from revealing that Mueller and the FBI knew the information in the dossier was false, even as the Bureau used it to obtain electronic surveillance warrants on Trump foreign policy aide Carter Page. From The New American, Tuesday night, MyPillow CEO and prominent supporter of former President Trump, Mike Lindell, revealed that he was a victim of a surprise subpoena served by the FBI while he was at a Hardee's restaurant in Mankato, Minnesota. Lindell says he was cornered by FBI agents who demanded his phone. He took to the air with Brandon House, unfolding exactly what took place. According to Lindell, the FBI was specifically concerned with any contact he had with County Clerk Tina Peters from Mesa County, Colorado. They want to know about Dominion and Mesa County in Colorado, said Lindell, who described the event on his Frank Speech channel. And breaking hot news, Mike Lindell, the pillow guy, was just raided by the FBI. We are now officially living in a weaponized police state, rigged elections and all. Our country is a laughingstock all over the world. The majesty of the United States is gone. Can't let this happen. Take America back, Trump wrote. WND.com, Facebook, whose chief Mark Zuckerberg already has admitted to trying to influence the 2020 elections for Joe Biden by suppressing damaging information at the request of the FBI, now has been caught spying on private messages of those who use the social media platform and reporting them to the FBI. The report comes from Miranda Devine at the New York Post. She said sources inside the Department of Justice confirmed that Facebook spied on those who expressed anti-government or anti-authority sentiments or questioned the 2020 election and reported their statements to the FBI. Under the FBI collaboration operation, somebody at Facebook red flagged these supposedly subversive private messages over the past 19 months and transmitted them in redacted form to the Domestic Terrorism Operational Unit at FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. without a subpoena, she said. Interesting. Then from WND.com, Fox News host Tucker Carlson warning that every American should be terrified by the FBI's recent confrontation with an innocent woman in which agents claimed an anonymous tipster told them that she had been at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Carlson explained that the victim of the FBI maneuver was Lisa Gallagher, one of the many Trump supporters who woke up to an FBI raid earlier this month. Carlson explained the agents knew that she hadn't been there, that's in Washington, because of the government's extensive use of facial recognition software. So he said in this case, a snitch falsely claimed an innocent woman was guilty of something with which she had nothing to do. But she had supported Trump on Facebook and also had a Trump sign in her yard. Carlson said, quote, this is Soviet and there is no other word for it. The point was to use government agents to intimidate enemies of the regime. The Epoch Times saying that Florida-based U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon on Thursday appointed a senior Brooklyn federal judge to serve as special master to independently review documents that the FBI seized from former President Trump's estate. U.S. District Judge Raymond Deary will serve as an independent arbiter in the case, tasked with deciding whether any of the seized documents are privileged and should be off limits to federal investigators. Republican President Ronald Reagan appointed Deary to the federal bench in Brooklyn in 1986, where he was chief judge of that court from 2007 to 2011. Before that, he served as a U.S. attorney there. He now serves as a semi-retired senior judge. Deary served on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court between 2011 and 2019. That court reviews warrant applications from the U.S. government on matters of national security. Very interesting story, too, that has come out in regard to the fact that the National Archives refusing to turn over Joe Biden's vice presidential records on meetings with Hunter. And we have the same groups that are talking about the archive information with President Trump. Very interesting indeed. Let's see. Let me get to this story here before the break. From WND.com, a senior World Economic Forum official accused Canadian politicians of spreading disinformation, apparently for citing founder Klaus Schwab's boast that the globalist organization had penetrated the nation's cabinet. Adrian Monach, the WEF's managing director, said in an interview that Canada should be talking about a lot of things right now. It shouldn't really be talking about the World Economic Forum based in Geneva. But in a comment and question session in the House of Commons in February, Conservative Member of Parliament Colin Carey asked why Schwab boasted that WEF had trained Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and more than half of his cabinet, noting that raised concerns about outside interference in democracy. Speaking via a video link, Carey asked the House Speaker if the interest of transparency, if he would name which cabinet members are on board with the agenda. Well, a member of the far-left New Democratic Party challenged his colleague for promoting open disinformation. But folks, Klaus Schwab, in his comments, indicated that they were infiltrating the cabinets of various countries, including Canada, where he said, where he claimed up to 50% of the cabinet was following their ideals there of the World Economic Forum. He talked about this happening in Argentina and other countries as well, infiltrating countries around the world. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, many are claiming that birds are modern-day dinosaurs. Can this be true?
No, it's not, Chris. Evolutionists must have an evolutionary story that they can tell people, and this is the one that they've chosen to use this decade. But the story isn't even consistent with the facts. Even given the evolutionary interpretation of the dates of the fossils, it doesn't fit. For instance, the first bird in the fossil record is dated by evolutionary standards to be before the dinosaurs, not after. And birds are so different from dinosaurs, it simply is impossible to think that a marvelously designed bird could come from a dinosaur. They are very different. The birds were created on day 5 of creation week and dinosaurs on day 6, just like it says back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. It's a news roundup Friday here today, keeping you informed on a number of issues that are impacting our nation and certainly impacting believers across the nation as well. Many attacks on biblical moral values and certainly an attack upon the truth. What was the scripture talking about? My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And certainly we see what is taking place in our world today, the importance of understanding where we are and the importance of being salt and light in this time in which we live. Just getting back to a number of issues here today, we know the importance of this upcoming November election. So does Vice President Kamala Harris. This from Fox News. Last Saturday, she said she can't wait to cast her vote to end the archaic Senate filibuster in order to advance measures that protect abortion at a federal level and implement voting reform legislation. Her remarks came during a speech at the Democratic National Committee summer meeting at National Harbor in Maryland, where she urged support for Democratic Senate candidates in the November midterm election. With just two more seats in the Senate, we can codify Roe v. Wade. We can put the protections of Roe in law, she said. With two more seats in the U.S. Senate, we can pass the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Two more seats. You know, our President Joe Biden, he's been clear. He's kind of done with these archaic Senate rules that are standing in the way of those two issues, she said, on the filibuster. He's made that clear and has said that he will not allow that to obstruct these two issues. And, you know, for me as vice president, I'm also president of the Senate. I cannot wait to cast the deciding vote to break the filibuster on voting rights and reproductive rights. I cannot wait 59 days, she said in her quote on this past Saturday. Very interesting indeed. This election cycle is one that you must be informed, you must be praying for, and folks, you must be out there and casting your votes that represent your values. Speaking of Kamala Harris, this is astounding. She was on Sunday's Meet the Press. This was on NBC. And speaking with Chuck Todd, in which she told Chuck Todd that the border is secure, and pointed fingers at the Trump administration for the currently broken immigration system. Unbelievable. Here's how that interview went from MSNBC.
Would you call the border secure?
I think that there is no question that we have to do what the president and I asked Congress to do. Is the first request we make, pass a bill to create a pathway to citizenship. The border is secure, but we also have a broken immigration system, in particular over the last 4 years before we came in, and it needs to be fixed.
We're going to have 2 million people cross this border for the first time ever. You're confident this border is secure?
We have a secure border in that that is a priority for any nation, including ours and our administration. But there are still a lot of problems that we are trying to fix, given the deterioration that happened over the last 4 years. We also have to put in place a law and a plan for a pathway for citizenship for the millions of people who are here and are prepared to do what is legally required to gain citizenship. We don't have that in place because people are playing politics in a state like this and in Congress. By the way, you want to talk about bipartisanship on an issue that at one time was a bipartisan issue, both in terms of Republican senators and even presidents.
You know, this is amazing. Blaming the Trump administration for the border crisis. It seems to me things were kind of under control at that time. Even Chuck Todd questioned her on the 2 million for the first time. And she went through, well, we got to do this pathway to citizenship. I find it also interesting. These buses of illegal aliens are being shipped to places around the country to sanctuary areas, Washington, D.C., New York City, Chicago. Well, FoxNews.com reports two migrant buses from Del Rio, Texas, arrived near Vice President Kamala Harris's residence at the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. yesterday morning. Between 75 and 100 people who were picked up in Eagle Pass, Texas, sent by Governor Abbott. The group includes migrants from Venezuela, Uruguay, Colombia, Mexico. Multiple migrants were asked by Fox News Digital, and they said they think that the border is open. Contrary to what Harris said on Sunday during the interview, they're saying it's open. Here's one such clip.
And Vice President Harris said that the border is closed. Is the border closed? Do you believe that the border is closed or is it open?
It's open, not closed. The border is open.
The border is open. Do you believe that all the migrants believe that the border is open?
Yeah, everybody believes that the border is open. It's open because we enter. We come in free. No problem.
But it's open for you to come illegally, right?
Illegally, yes, illegally. That's true.
And you came illegally.
Yeah, we came illegally, not legal.
We came here illegally. It's free. It's open. You know, the welcome mat's been laid out here. The red carpet is laid out all across, you know, down into Mexico. It's amazing here, folks, what's going on. And this is being blamed upon the Trump administration. It's also interesting that Governor DeSantis followed through on his promise to fight the flow of migrants coming in, immigrants illegally. Last December, he announced plans to protect Floridians from the ongoing border crisis as millions cross the southern U.S. border, record-breaking fashion, saying we have a responsibility to stand up for the rule of law. We have a responsibility to the Constitution. We have a responsibility to stand up against an administration that's decided they don't want to have a secure border. So scheduled flights to the upscale Martha's Vineyard Island in Massachusetts, part of an effort to transport illegal immigrants to sanctuary destinations. All of these places boasting, we are a sanctuary area, we are a sanctuary. And so they've gone to these sanctuary places. And what are they doing? They're complaining. We're not prepared. We're not equipped. You're using illegals as a political pawn. Well, it comes to find out that things are not so rosy in Martha's Vineyard. And here is a shelter coordinator speaking out on this issue.
So, what are the most difficult challenges right now?
The difficult challenges are at some point in time, they have to move from here to somewhere else, right? We don't have the services to take care of 50 immigrants, and we certainly don't have housing. We're in a housing crisis as we are on this island.
Oh, my.
And so we can't house everyone here that lives here and works here. We don't have housing for 50 more people.
We don't have housing. We don't have housing for 50 more people. They can't stay here. Meanwhile, the floodgates are open into Texas and Florida and other states where they're being sent. It's amazing. And here you have the sanctuary area. They can't handle 50 more people, 50 illegal. We got a housing problem here. We can't house 50 more people. The billionaire island, this is from Todd Starnes, announced a humanitarian crisis. A humanitarian crisis. 50 illegal aliens came to Martha's Vineyard. They called out the National Guard. Folks, they called out at least 125 Massachusetts National Guard members activated to assist with these 50 illegals that were bused into Joint Base Cape Cod. National Guard working with the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency, over 50. Think about the thousands and thousands and tens of thousands flowing into Texas and Arizona and other places as well. Western Journal reporting the word hypocrisy is being bandied about in reference to Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot after she shunted illegal immigrants to a suburban area after initially saying they were welcome in her city. Yeah, open arms, they're welcome. Well, 64 of the 175 illegal immigrants sent to Chicago were put on a bus and sent out to Burr Ridge. No notice to local officials there. Where is that sanctuary status, Lori Lightfoot? Where's the open arms? I guess that's only for Texas and only for Florida? Only for red states? Washington Free Beacon reporting the Biden administration spending nearly $80 million on a new system to monitor illegal immigrants that prohibits the use of GPS technology, a decision that experts say will make it impossible to locate their whereabouts after their release in the United States. The system, according to the government records reviewed by the Washington Free Beacon, is meant to track illegal immigrants via monthly check-ins via phone. Migrants released into the U.S. interior ages 18 to 19 are eligible for the program. Any GPS monitoring that would give exact locations, such as ankle monitor tracking, is explicitly forbidden, according to the contract. This sort of thing is popular among the left. It sounds great, but the reality is that people in these programs will likely never be deported, former acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement Ron Vitellio said to the Beacon. There's nothing at the end of these programs. If they don't report in, that's that. They're now a fugitive. Really? So no tracking of them, but we'll give you this phone, and you just check in once every 30 days. Unbelievable what's taking place in our land. Well, friends, we just had 9/11, a tragic time. Nearly 3,000 American civilians were killed. But a new video was released this week showing multiple young Americans expressing apathy over the September 11, 2001 Islamic terrorist. Some said, "We deserved it." I want you to hear the apathy that is there and to see the product of what is coming through our college and university system.
So yesterday was the 21st anniversary of 9/11. I'm asking the younger generation, does this date still hold significance to you? Do you still think it's important?
Nobody cares about it. Like, our age. Because, like, a lot of us understand, like, the reality behind what happened and how much, like, we did to other countries to, like, not, like, deserve, but, like, deserve what happened, like, 9/11. Obviously, like, support to all the families and everybody, like, that passed. And, like, it's a tragic event. But the amount of we've done to other countries, like, the younger generation doesn't care because we all, like, hate the military. We hate America. So there's, like, bigger tragedies that really don't get, like, touched on. Like, even Juneteenth this year wasn't really celebrated that much. If something like that isn't getting, like, celebrated or given, like, the support that it should be given, why would we give it to, like, 9/11? I'm sorry, but I think slavery is a little bit of a bigger tragedy than 9/11 was.
I forgot that, like, it was 9/11 the other day until I saw, like, a post about it. Like, I just did not remember at all.
Do you think it's still significant?
Maybe, but not really to the younger generation.
That's a good question. A lot of people really forget about it. I know the thing is to say don't forget, but no, I don't think it really gets talked about much these days anymore.
I grew up in a really small town, so every single year you had to watch in every single class from different angles of burning buildings, people dying, and they'd be like, "What did you learn from that?" And I'd be like, "That was terrible, and I'm 7. I can't pretend like that what happened to them didn't matter, but I know for me it doesn't hold a lot of significance, and it just feels like a lot of times it makes up for, like, excessive patriotism.
Just asking that, like, the younger generation, if they remember what yesterday was.
Sunday.
Was that a trick question? I don't get it.
So today, September 12th, what was yesterday?
Oh, Sunday. Oh. Yeah, Sunday. Yeah, Sunday.
Yeah, 9/11.
I'm from New York. It's traumatizing. It's traumatizing, and I don't think we will ever forget about it.
So I've been talking to a lot of the students here on campus, and a lot of them say that they don't know or really care about 9/11. I even had a student who said, because we don't celebrate Juneteenth, we shouldn't celebrate 9/11. What are your thoughts on that?
Who are those children, and what are their names?
Wow. Excessive patriotism doesn't really matter to me anymore. Friends, this is the generation that is being grown up to be the future leaders of this land, the politicians, the educators, the ones going into corporate America. How far we have declined. Back on 9/11 and the days after, we had God Bless America and prayer meetings that were filled to capacity. And now God shoved out the door once again. Back in a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
The rise of fentanyl overdose deaths is skyrocketing and has been the leading cause of death in adults ages 18 to 45. Street drugs have been laced with it, creating new lines of counterfeit pills. Fentanyl is 50 times stronger than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine. Sadly, many looking for their next high are experimenting with fentanyl and losing their life as a result. Addressing the issue from a biblical perspective is Mark Shaw, founder of the Addiction Connection. In his 33-page booklet, Fentanyl, Mark examines many topics including pain management, what God says about drugs, why people are overdosing, and hope and answers from God's perspective. He addresses issues of the heart, which lead many to addiction. The booklet Fentanyl is available for a donation of $6 or three copies for $15. Call VCY at 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Yes, the verse from, was it Isaiah 5, certainly does apply. To woe to those who call good evil and evil good. You know, we have this darkness for light today, light for darkness. We can't even discern truth anymore. We're so been so taken in by deception that people can't understand truth any longer. I'll tell you where truth is found, and it's unchangeable. It's found in the Word of God. John chapter 17, verse 17 says, sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. That's where truth is found. Well, friends, as we mentioned, the matter of the elections coming up here, November coming very, very quickly. Todd Starnes also brought this forth of a Florida gubernatorial candidate, Charlie Crist, referred to his opponent, Governor Ron DeSantis, as DeSatan, and then compared himself to Christ. There was a recently surfaced video from one of his events that took place, and I'd like you to listen in.
This is an election about decency, about being decent to one another, about being kind to everyone. It's called a Florida for all. You know, we got a divider on the other side and the uniter over here. You know, some people call him DeSatan. Have you heard that?
Indeed it is.
I'm trying to be nice. The Satan versus that. Oh, think about it. Boom. No, we got a great race ahead. We do. And I'm excited about it. And the choice is crystal clear. There's no question about it. It is crystal clear. He's bad. We're good.
Didn't he say something at the beginning of those comments about being decent to one another and being kind to one another, referencing him to being DeSatan? Some people call him DeSatan, and then pointed to his campaign sign that says Christ, and he says, you have that or you have, and then people yell out Christ. Isn't that something? Coming from Wisconsin Family Action, Wisconsin Family Action yesterday filed a records request with the Madison Police Department seeking information about the department's investigation of the arson attack that took place on May 8, 2022 at WFA's Madison headquarters. Folks, that was Mother's Day. Remember the firebombing that that took place there? Jelaine Appling came on Crosstalk the day after. Madison Police Department has furnished no information or updates to Wisconsin Family Action since early June on the status of their investigation. Jelaine Appling said the Madison Police Department is tasked with protection of all Madison residents, as well as the prosecution of those who commit violent crimes, such as the arson attack on our building. If MPD cannot or will not provide a reasonable update after more than 3 months, we can only assume that either the investigation is closed or that the investigation has not been aggressive as we were originally told it would be. There are also records requests that were filed with the Attorney General, Josh Call. Where's the Attorney General of Wisconsin on this? With Governor Tony Evers, Madison Police Department Chief Sean Barnes. Where are these people? Some of them are running for office again. Liberty Council reporting 47 members of Congress in a letter to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin demanding that the Department of Defense immediately revoke the COVID-19 shot mandate and reinstate those service members who have already been discharged. Since August 24, 2021, the Department of Defense has unlawfully administered emergency use authorized products as if they were fully licensed FDA-approved products, and military members have not been allowed to exercise their legal right to refuse them. As a result, Republican lawmakers led by Representative Mike Johnson, Chip Roy, and Thomas Massey presented evidence to Austin regarding the detrimental effect the shot mandate has on military readiness and national security. They wrote, as a result of your mandate, 8% of the Army's approximately 1 million soldiers face expulsion. Army recruiters cannot meet their fiscal year 2022 target, and the Army has cut its projected fiscal year 23 end strength by 12,000 soldiers. As a major land war rages in Europe, our own military faces a self-imposed readiness crisis. If 75,000 soldiers are discharged, it begs the question whether the Army will be able to replace them. The Epoch Times is reporting that a team of nine experts from Harvard, Johns Hopkins, and other top universities have published paradigm-shifting research about the efficacy and safety of the COVID-19 vaccines and why mandating vaccines for college students is unethical. A 50-page study published by this the Social Science Research Network at the end of August analyzed CDC and industry-sponsored data on vaccine adverse events and concluded that mandates for COVID-19 boosters for young people may cause 18 to 98 actual serious adverse events for each COVID-19 infection-related hospitalization theoretically prevented. The report goes on from there, but truly troubling indeed, calling it unethical. Western Journal reporting a 17-year-old high school golfer died suddenly Monday in Holmes County on Florida's panhandle while practicing for an upcoming tournament. Tyler Erickson, a senior at Holmes County High School, known for his prowess in both academics and athletics, was a state president of the National Beta Club, was a standout talent on the golf course. His parents said he came home following golf practice, drinking some water, decided to go back to the course to practice. When the sun went down, never returned. His parents grew concerned, went to the course, found their son dead on the floorboard of a golf cart on the course's sixth hole. Tragedy, just in the latest in a string of sudden deaths that have struck seemingly healthy young men in recent weeks. Saturday, there was an 18-year-old, a lifeguard at San Benedetto's del Tronto in Italy, died shortly after beginning to feel ill. Mother said he was a healthy young man working as a lifeguard. Last week, a 17-year-old unexpectedly died in his sleep. A senior at a high school in central New Jersey, where he served as a backup center on the football team. August 30th, a 20-year-old Canadian junior ice hockey star died during the intermission of a game, had been named captain of his team just days prior. Happening all over. No explanations coming forth as to why these things are occurring. The tragedy, the heartache, the sorrow so many are going through at this time. Epoch Times is reporting three hospitals in California are facing lawsuits alleging that they treated patients with the controversial antiviral drug remdesivir without receiving informed consent using a protocol which two attorneys alleged led to wrongful death. Daniel Watkins with Watkins and Litofsky and Michael Hamilton with Hamilton Associates filed three complaints, one against St. Agnes Medical Center, Community Regional Medical Center, and Clovis Community Medical Center in the Superior Court of California in Fresno County on September 7th. They filed the lawsuits on behalf of 14 Fresno area families who allege that the hospitals engaged in medical deception and failed to provide informed consent in relating to the potential side effects such as kidney failure. Full informed consent means that patients must be provided with full information about the deadly harm that this dangerous experimental drug causes on its own, the lawsuit states, that they must be told that the only time that it was ever tested, it was pulled because it killed so many people. The lawsuit referenced a study found in the New England Journal of Medicine in which a safety board found it to be the least effective and deadliest drug in the trial before it was suspended after 53% of the Ebola patients who took the drug died. Friends, it's amazing. Lawsuit filed here on that issue. Today, we're opening our phone lines to give you opportunity to comment on these or other current event stories. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. 800-733-9829. In other news, as his role as President Joe Biden's climate czar, John Kerry has flown more than 180,000 miles in flights. That's emitted more than 9.5 million pounds of carbon. Washington Free Beacon analysis found 75 of his official travel announcements from March of 21 to July 22 that show him flying roughly 180,100 miles, the equivalent of traveling around the world more than seven times to discuss climate change with various world leaders. I wonder if he's not heard of a telephone or Zoom. Pretty amazing. And Pete Buttigieg, this from WND.com, is hoping that the federal government will follow California's lead in approving a regulation that will ban the sale of new gasoline-powered vehicles. It's interesting to see how the states are trying to go above and beyond what we're doing at the federal level, Buttigieg said. He said he's really interested to follow these developments while we continue to set a national policy that's the baseline for all of this. We need to move in the direction of electric vehicles. And look, industry is already there. At least one major automaker says that they're not even planning to make gas cars past 2035. But we've got to make sure that this happens quickly enough to help us beat climate change, he said. The reference was to General Motors, which said last year that it hopes to end sales of gas and diesel engines by 2035. Also, Pamela Geller is reporting, like a bridge to nowhere, the Biden administration announcing $900 million to build EV chargers across 53,000 miles of national highway system space. Amazing. Let's go to the phone lines here today on Crosstalk. We're going to begin with, this is Mark in Monroe. Hi, Mark, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Fine.
I think November will be more like what I would call the mid-squirm election. The left is on such shaky ground. If the right doesn't step up to the plate, the shame will be on us. And as far as law and border goes, I think Obama blew his legacy by not housing the 50 illegal immigrants at Martha's Vineyard.
Isn't that
That's
amazing?
My comment.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. Yeah, couldn't deal with 50 people. We don't have housing enough for our people the way it is. We can't take 50 more. I thought you were a sanctuary area. Isn't that amazing? We've got Zach calling in from River Falls. You're on the air, Zach.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the young adults that thought 9/11 was irrelevant and that we deserved that. It makes me sick to my stomach about all those people that don't have mothers and fathers anymore, brothers and sisters, and so on. I took some time and watched some documentaries on Sunday, and about the planes flying into the buildings and the body parts being scattered all over the ground. The look in the firefighters' eyes when they had to climb 110 stories for search and rescue, knowing that they wouldn't even probably make it back home to see their own families. And they went anyways. Fuel going down the elevators, burning people alive, and some surviving that. With the fuel just being everywhere, burning their clothes to their skin, burning their eyes. Nobody deserved that day. It's just an awful thing and disrespectful to say to people who lost loved ones. No one deserved that.
Yeah. Thank you for the comments here today and how quick it was to forget. And where they said, well, young people, today young people just don't find this relevant anymore. We must not forget. I mean, this was an Islamic terrorist attack upon our nation. And certainly the target was no accident when they went to the center of our economic system, whether the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, our defense system, and it appears that plane that went down in Shanksville was actually destined for the U.S. Capitol, our legislative system as well. I mean, they sought to bring this country, and they talk about having excessive patriotism. It's outrageous.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Zach, for the call.
Yep, no problem.
And friends, we're up against a break here on Crosstalk. By the way, major credit card companies announcing that MasterCard, Visa, American Express, they have bowed to political pressure from Democrats and gun control activists and now creating a separate code for purchases made at gun stores. May it be that when one goes to buy a gun or an accessory or a pepper spray or a knife, that their credit card might be denied? Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Many remember that the lockstep document was written by the Rockefellers in 2010, the Rockefeller Foundation, 2010. And what did it talk about? a pandemic, and when you read their scenario, it sounded just like the coronavirus and 2020. So whenever these groups do tabletop exercises, we might want to pay attention. And now there's been uncovered another. It was a tabletop exercise for food shortage. And that was held in 2015. Well, my friends, look at where we're at. One of the people involved in the tabletop exercise was John Podesta, tied directly to Hillary Clinton. The Biden regime has just brought John Podesta back into the White House, one of the men that ran the tabletop exercise in 2015 for food shortages. Let's be prepared. I'm Brennan House.
By the way, the stockpiling of our strategic petroleum reserve is reaching crisis levels at this point. And I find it interesting. I mean, we've sold off to foreign countries, like to our adversaries, like communist China. And what's interesting is that President Biden now may buy oil just below $80 a barrel to fill it back up. Do you remember when President Trump was stopped from getting it full from the Democratic opponents when it was at $24? Is a column here from Bloomberg. Interesting to think about. Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. We've got John in Lubbock, Texas. John, you're on the air.
Hi, I was calling to comment on the fight, I guess, for pro-abortion and the reprobate thought of them wanting to codify this into law. In my opinion, if the pro-abortion faction is that adamant about it becoming a federal law and a so-called constitutional right, then it should also become a federal law and a constitutional right that before these women are actually undergo the procedure of murdering their own children, that they should be forced to watch an actual abortion on video or something that would, you know, open their eyes to what they're actually doing versus just saying that, you know, it's a lump of cells and it's not a human life. And in regard to the situation of the border with all these immigrants that are coming over, all these illegals, and yet these elites cannot handle a small handful. I'm calling from Texas, and this is a battle every single day, everywhere we go. I mean, it's just an overflow and overabundance. And the problem that I see with the federal government in not controlling this is that every single group, with the exception of the actual American taxpayer, has any say-so. Groups like CARE, groups like Black Lives Matter, groups like Antifa, their voices are being heard, but yet ours are being just literally silenced. And it's sickening of how people can just accept what they're being told as gospel truth.
You know, it's interesting, too, is how they are blaming the previous administration for the problems we have today.
I agree. How is that even sensible? Because Trump had like 400,000 in 2020 encounters, and the first year of Biden's administration, they had over 1 million.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for raising your voice on this issue. And what happens in November is going to have an impact on this issue further.
That's one thing, and forgive me for interrupting you, but that's one thing that I think the American people are being misled. Everyone's counting on everybody's counting on the election, the red tsunami, but I don't trust the Democrats any farther than I can throw a bull by the tail, because they are planning something. They're not the least bit worried about the midterms if you listen to them.
Yeah. Thank you for the call here, John.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you from Lubbock, Texas. Steve in Viroqua, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, Jim. If you bear with me, I'm a little worked up. I want to tell you about a situation that my daughter's in right now. She's in her second year of college. She's going for a school teacher. She met a guy from Spain who's also going to be a school teacher. Well, they've been married a year now. And the government will not give him his citizenship, which he should get since he's married. And they're denying him a work visa or whatever, and they're deporting him. And the reason why they're deporting him, he won't get vaccinated. And they're being forced out in January. And I have called Ron Johnson here in Wisconsin and tried getting a hold of him and discussing this. And Ron Johnson just keeps telling me he can't get involved. They don't make law. I said, well, when the Republicans do take House, maybe they could, you know, look into this and get going on it, and maybe they won't have to leave by January. Well, he confirmed that there was nothing he could do about it. And they have gotten an attorney, and the attorney has told them that it's going to cost them $20,000 to fight it. They got less than a 50% chance of winning, and he basically just told them if I was them, I would try to lay low and just hope that some miracle would happen in November. Now, this kid has done everything legally to get in the United States to get an education, been married a year, and just because he won't take the vaccine, he's gone?
You know,
something's not right.
Something's not right, and I'm not seeing, vax clinics at the borders. Before you walk into this country, you must have a shot.
That's what he said. You know, if I just come across the border, they would have bust me wherever I want, put some money in my pocket, and said, have a nice day. But now that I've done it legally, they know who I am, and they either I play by the rules or I'm gone. So they're getting shipped out to Colombia in January, and they're both going because they're married.
Steve, thank you for raising that issue. And tragedy, what's taking place, we're going to pick up one more call here, but hopefully, or two, we'll see. Richard in Texas, you're on the air.
Hi. I want to comment on 9/11 and how people, or the younger generation, are seeing it as a meaningless thing. We're kind of an entertainment society and don't like to look into things for ourselves. And there's been a lot of indoctrination throughout the years and lack of information. But I'd like to recommend a movie, if I may. And it was something I wanted to watch. And oddly enough, Amazon Prime says it's not available in my area. Netflix says it's not available in my country, which I wanted to, it piqued my curiosity even more. It's an Italian movie called Day of the Siege. And the people that like entertainment and a good movie that has some battle scenes, it's rated R because it's kind of hard to have battle scenes that aren't R, but quite frankly are every day of my life in our current society is no longer PG. So I highly recommend it for people that want to be entertained, learn a little bit more. But there was a 9/11 event over 500 years ago in 1683. And this movie is about that, called The Day of the Siege.
I've got to run here. I thank you for the call, Richard. I'm completely out of time, though. Thanks for sharing on Crosstalk today. Friends, troubling times in which we live, but don't lose heart. Be of good cheer. Jesus said, I have overcome the world, and we can keep our trust in him. By the way, the Lord's Day is coming up on Sunday. I trust you'll be in a Bible-believing, Bible-teaching local church. God bless you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.